going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining me. Episode 17 of Vicious Whispers. Today we will have Chapter 10 of the Bright Side audiobook. That will come a little bit later. First, all about me and what a wonderful week I've had. I don't know if wonderful is the right word, but let's just say that. Today's been good. I didn't get a whole lot of work. I woke up early, like 6 o'clock, got a little bit of work done. So that was good before I had to start taking care of the kids. Took my daughter to school, but then I went to yoga. Usually don't go on Thursdays, but I was like, you know what? Let's just do it. I need to. Been a little bit worried about my shoulder. Did jiu-jitsu on Saturday. Had a lot of fun doing it, but it was a little bit sore. I was a little bit scared. Maybe I shouldn't have come back so early. And then the yoga session I had yesterday, my shoulder was really aching. So today I went back, tried it out. It was definitely pushed a little bit, but I felt pretty good overall. And I just knew I needed the workout. Came straight home, jumped into the cold pool, which sucked. But it was good for me. Did about 20 minutes in there, 20 minutes in the sauna. Now here I am ready to get some shit done. After this, I'll get back into Beyond Brightside. Finally digging into that. I'm leaving the short stories alone for a little while because I need to turn this, which isn't a whole lot, I think it's like 18,000 words, maybe 20,000 words, gotta turn that shit into a full ass novel. Last night I was thinking about, I realized I needed to add some scenes, and I think I know what those scenes are, and all it did was intensify the book. So that's awesome. Instead of it being a problem and being overwhelmed by needing to come up with new stuff, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I want to write this. I want to write that scene. That scene's going to make the book. Pretty excited about that. One of the cool things that is going on, again, maybe cool is not the right word, but I've been having talks with my friend, one of my good friends. We'd been talking about how much therapy has helped me. He kind of felt like he needed it, but I knew he wasn't going to do it, so we decided we would just talk once a week. He doesn't have a lot of close friends, no one that he talks to about personal stuff, and we have a lot of similar situations and similar backgrounds. So we've been talking, and at first I was like, I don't know, I don't have a lot of time. I mean, I have front talks with friends in the backyard maybe once a week. They're always really good, but I just, you know, most of my time I want to spend writing or whatever else, and so I have a limited amount of time. Not sure if I want to devote that to talking on the phone. Generally I don't want it, but with him I was like, it'd be good for me, and it's been awesome. So I think it's been good for him, but I've got a lot of shit from him. I've learned a lot from him, and some of his actions have made me take actions. It made me decide I was going to cut caffeine and cannabis again, because I realize I have such an addictive personality. Generally, I'll tell myself, okay, I'm only going to have a little bit of caffeine. Next thing you know, I'm fucking full-on addicted. And I just have way too much. Sometimes up to, like, 700 milligrams for the day, which is crazy. I'm trying to be healthy and trying to take care of myself, but then I'm overloading my whole system with all this caffeine. So I realized that wasn't good. And more than the health risk, I was just, I don't like being out of control. I don't like not having full, I don't like telling myself I'm going to do one thing and then going and doing the other. That's just, to me, it's a mental weakness. I don't like it. So I was like, okay, I just need to stop. I'll just cut caffeine out altogether. If I can't find a balance with a little bit of caffeine, I'll cut that shit. I was worried about having headaches or withdrawals, especially because I've been using so much. But there was nothing, and so after 2 days of not having the caffeine, I decided I'd also cut cannabis. Again, when I did my last 30-day, well, it was supposed to be a 30-day cleanse or cut. I think it ended up being 40. The first 2 weeks were really difficult for me, because I've been using cannabis for 31 years, and pretty heavily. So the first 2 weeks were rough, especially with nightmares and everything, and sleep was a little bit difficult. This time there hasn't been really any drawbacks. The first night was a little bit hard to sleep, but other than that, like, I don't really have the craving, I don't have that the mental addiction anymore, so that's been good. And I also cut out fucking stupid-ass video games. I find myself on my phone just wasting time playing a stupid game. Late at night, I play video games on Xbox sometimes, and it was good in a way because I would do my stretching and everything else, but I realized it's just an escape. It's making me less productive. I could still do those, like if I'm serious about those stretches being good for me, and I could still do those stretches, but I could be listening to one of my audiobooks. I mean, checking for errors, or I can be working on a book in my head, or there's all kinds of shit I could be doing that's productive. So me saying that I don't have enough time for X, Y, and Z, that's bullshit. So that's why I'm making these changes, and I'm happy. And the other reason why I'm doing it is not only is it increasing my productivity with writing, but I also know that it's going to increase my time with hobbies. Oh, sorry. My little dickhead cat is right here making noise. Say hello to Ghost. Come here, Ghost, little fucking shithead. I say that with love. Little fucking shithead. That should have been his real name, but we let the kids name him, and they didn't have that in their vocabulary back then. Hopefully they don't now. Depends on what music they've been listening to. With mine, they might. Anyhow, enough about the cat. More about me. So besides it increasing the writing productivity and getting a lot more done there, it's also going to increase my hobbies, which is playing guitar. Definitely playing more guitar since I stopped. And working on my German. So trying to learn German. So both of those activities have increased, and we'll see what else. But definitely is freeing up more time. I mentioned earlier about therapy. I've talked about that quite a bit. It's actually, I do it once every 2 weeks. I think it's been, I know it's been super helpful. But every time I go, I'm always thinking, I was like, this is probably the last time. What I'm, you know, there's nothing to even talk about. I got all my shit figured out. But this past time, I wanted to talk about the addictive personality and why that's a problem, why I have it. And it was really interesting. And he was saying, you know, when you're doing those behaviors, when you're trying to escape, you're escaping from a certain emotion. You're probably not even aware of that emotion like I wasn't. But that's what it is. And so now I'm trying to, when I have those urges, I'm trying to see like what's really going on. But that led into a talk about my inner rage, which has been a problem for a very, very long time, and my defiant personality. I did a personality test at the start of this thing, and I think some of my highest scores were antisocial, drug dependency, alcohol dependency, because it also looked at past stuff. With the alcohol, I no longer do that. And then defiant personality. And so we were able to trace the defiant personality back to the youngest ages. I was a pretty shitty kid. If anyone asked my parents or anyone else around me, any adult, they would probably all say I was an awesome kid. I was probably quiet, but like great grades and pretty good athlete and all that good stuff. Nice guy, nice kid. But that wasn't the real case. And it only got progressively worse as I got older. And so much of that was just a middle finger to my parents, very anti-everything they wanted me to be, very destructive, very against all authority. And I still kind of have that. So that's something that I'm trying to figure out, how to change that, how to get rid of that inner rage. The inner rage is something that I had dealt with football. I dealt with it with fighting, with jiu-jitsu, yoga helps it. So anything where I'm getting out that kind of energy has been super helpful, but that shit is still there. It's definitely gotten a lot better, but it's something that I want to get rid of because I don't want to pass that on, and I don't want it. And I also get rid of it a lot through writing, I think. Being able to kill motherfuckers in my writing is a great catharsis. It's like, oh yeah, you cut me off? Well, guess what, motherfucker? You get decapitated today. That'd be too quick, though. Maybe I'll find a way to keep him alive so he has to look at his body rotting. Maybe I'll do that. But not anytime soon. Although there is a decapitation in Beyond Brightside. Can't tell you who it is, but it's going to be awesome and traumatic. But enough about me on the writing front, which is still about me, but it's the business side of me. More positive reviews have come in for Ain't No Messiah, which is awesome. People are saying that they really get it, that it's affecting them emotionally, that especially the ending, they feel the ending is justified. Can't tell you what it is, of course. But yeah, so everything that I'm reading in the reviews is awesome. There are definitely things that people that won't work for certain people, and it's all, you know, it's all legitimate too. One of my friends who's an author wrote to me about chapter 10 not following chapter 9 or leading into chapter 11. I was like, well, that's because it was a present scene, and I thought it was obvious. I thought about labeling all the present scenes differently, maybe with a countdown clock or something with that, so there was definitely you could tell it was separate. But with reading it, for me it worked. For other people it worked. But then for her and other people, they just didn't get it. And so that's something that I could consider. I mean, I'm not going to change it now. It worked for me, so fuck it. But it's always interesting to read the reviews and see what doesn't work and to learn from it. I think the first reaction as an author to anything negative in a review is to get defensive and to take it as an attack and be like, fuck that person. They don't know shit. That's not a very healthy approach to it. I had entered, I think it was Writer's Digest. They have their annual contest or whatever, and I just recently got back results from that. And it was a really good review. And they included some, I forget exactly what they said. It was about Twisted Reunion, but about how some of the stories could have been longer, and also some it wouldn't hurt if I put down like what time of the year it was, or just certain details that wouldn't take away from the writing at all, but it would ground the reader a little bit more. And my first reaction to that was, fuck you. But I was like, that makes sense. So that's something I'll be looking to do in my other ones. Maybe not necessarily make them longer, but at least grounding the reader a little bit more in where they are. That's something I should be doing anyhow. So definitely got something positive from that. I was going to read some of the interview questions that I just answered recently, but I decided not to. I was going to print them up, bring them down here, read them to you. I thought they were kind of funny. But if you guys want to read that shit, go online. Just Google my name, Ain't No Messiah, interviews, stuff like that. It'll pop up. You can see it yourself. I am doing a blog tour, and lots of those interview questions will be spread out over all those different blogs. So don't know where I will be appearing on those yet, but hopefully there will be a bunch of them. I want to spread Messiah as much as possible. The nice thing about Messiah, too, is this is just book one. So to see it getting a good response is pretty nice. One of the questions I did answer, though, with that, and I think I touched on this last week, was whether or not I write for the reader or just write for myself, try to be original. And I said that definitely 100% write for myself, but the only time I worry about how the reader's going to take it is once the shit's done. It's like once it's out there, when I'm waiting for reviews. So yeah, so now's the scary time. It's like, I just created this thing, didn't really give it to too many people at all to read until it was finished. And it's like, and now I have to see how people are reacting to it. So not taking the readers into account, that can be a little bit scary. But again, if I was writing specifically for certain people, I don't know. I get it as a business move and to be smarter or whatever else, but it seems disingenuous. Doesn't seem real. Doesn't seem like a thing an artist should be doing. So that's why I write for myself. All right. If you can't tell, I'm going a little bit fast with this one today. I enjoy talking with you guys, but I got shit to do. I got to go pick up my son pretty soon, and we still haven't listened to chapter 10. So why don't we jump into that? This is going to be chapter 10 of Brightside, narrated by T. Quillen. After that, we'll come back and see if there was anything important that I missed or that we want to discuss about it. All right, guys, check it out. Chapter 10, here it is.
Chapter 10. day 100, and I'm just trying to get to work. I'm walking down the sidewalk, the morning air so cold. The helicopter is still circling, which means they haven't found Wayne. That's good. Means the boots are busy. Busy means they won't be checking my apartment, the closet. I'm running the plan over in my head, and I see a group of people outside Lodge 2. They're watching guys in white coats wheeling someone out on a gurney. There's no hurry, because whoever it is isn't moving under the black plastic bag. I know I should keep moving, get to work, look like everything's normal. But I find myself getting closer. I see Tommy, the 19-year-old punk with his bright orange mohawk, and I ask him what's going on.
"Another one bites the dust," he says.
I think about my closet, knowing it's just getting started. Palmer, the only boot I know by name, is taking statements. He's got his aviator sunglasses and fuck you attitude. He catches me staring and I don't blink. Palmer's the boot who almost put a bullet in my head the day I thought Michelle was coming to save me, when I ran out in the street waving my arms like an idiot. Someone grabs my arm. Sheriff Melvin and that bushy white mustache.
"You're supposed to be at work, aren't you, Joe?"
The way he says it, I know he's telling me to move along. But I ask who died.
"Sheila Clark."
Sheila, the one who saw me with Crystal. The one who swore she'd never tell Rachel. Swore she'd never say a goddamn word. Melvin wipes crumbs off his shirt.
"You know anything about it?"
"No."
"Where were you last night?"
"Home."
"People saw you running all over town. What were you doing?"
"Couldn't sleep."
"You can do some laundry?"
"Huh?" Sheriff Melvin steps in. Sniffs.
"Lot of bleach."
"Yeah. Like I said, I couldn't sleep." Melvin takes off his sunglasses. I hadn't really seen his eyes before. How they were so open. Trying to look like, "Hey, remember, I'm on your team." Palmer's staring at me, smiling all smug, wanting me to know when this is over he might finish the job. I give him a nod to say my schedule's wide open. Melvin thinks about reaching for his gun, shoving it in my face, yelling, "I'm one dumb son of a bitch." The sort of thing he used to do back in the real world. "I should get to work," I say. Melvin says that's a good idea. He waits until I'm crossing the street before he heads back into the crowd. So I keep walking. Not running like day 66. After I found out my father was the one who turned me in. I can't tell you where I was running after I'd hung up with Mom. I just kept going. Through the dark and desolate park and into the woods. I'd made it 3 steps when my foot sank into the snow, cold rising up over my shoe, seeping through my sock. I yanked my right foot out of my shoe, bent over, pulled it out with a loud schlop. There wasn't any grass nearby, so I took off my sock, wiped down my shoe, and cleaned it as best I could. With both shoes back on, I continued up the trail, looked for signs of someone else, kept an eye out for deep snow. The sweet smell took me back to a time I had hope. Back to all the hikes I'd taken with Dad. The hikes Mom couldn't go on because her knees were acting up. How we all pretended it had nothing to do with how much time she spent on them. Then I pictured Dad on the phone, telling someone to arrest his son. It took me a few minutes to get to the thick pine where it looked like the trail ended, but really just whipped around to the right. I was back at the tree. A rough heart carved into the bark with my name on top. A small heart beneath it. Michelle's name X'd out at the bottom. Rachel's name, too. The women I'd hurt. The pain I'd caused. I kept walking for hours, paying just enough attention to stay away from the fence line. The wind doing its best to knock me over. Suddenly, a huge cracking sound filled the air. I spun and watched as a huge tree slowly toppled to the earth. It landed with a thud and bounced right past me, knocked over two small trees before coming to a stop. One boulder, then two, rolled down the mountain and nestled up against the fallen pine. Several other large rocks were scattered up above. I made my way up to them and stood in front of a half-covered cave someone had been hiding. The fence line was up another couple hundred feet, but sometimes rangers roamed. I looked around. The woods were silent. No one in sight. Danny had given me a flashlight keychain and I flicked it on. Wood beams braced the rough walls carved out with a pick. Little metal tracks snaked into the darkness. I followed them, my feet crunching over the dirt. The tunnel seemed to go on forever, and I started to fear another tree toppling, crashing into the cave, trapping me in there forever. But I pressed on, continued down the steep slope, needing to know where this led. I must have gone a half mile before I finally saw light. That full moon shining at the end of my shaft. My heart pumped, and I thought about all those island getaways I'd been selling. Pictured myself on the beach drinking something cold as waves crashed and spread up to my toes. But then I got to the end of the shaft, a tiny outcrop on the edge of the cliff. My heart stopped. The bridge that had once connected Brightside to the next peak had been destroyed. 200 feet down. I threw myself against the ground, shut my eyes, my stomach flopping around, every inch of me pouring sweat. But 200 feet wasn't a mile. With a lot of rope, I could make it. Just not with this wind. I hadn't thought I'd been up there that long, but my watch showed me I had 2 hours to get to work. As quick as I could, I made my way back up the shaft. There was no way I was leaving my new secret exposed, so I gathered rocks and piled them in front of the entrance. I swept huge mounds of snow over it as the sun peaked over the horizon. It wasn't perfect, but it'd have to do. I only had 10 minutes to be at my desk. My pants were in decent shape, and I'd clean off my shoes better at the office. My jacket was a mess, so I stripped it off and wadded it into a ball, walked over to the pile of rocks. Real quick and quiet, I moved a boulder near the top and tossed the jacket into the darkness. When I stepped out of the woods, it was light enough for me to put on my sunglasses. I cut across the wet grass and headed for the southern archway. The last part of the park was always the hardest for me. The cabin up the pebbled path on the left. The dog park to my right. The one that'd make me start thinking about Sunny and Lily. I got on the sidewalk, Super Pond directly ahead, a name too big for the tiny window. It had been a while since I looked outside. I usually avoided the store because Robert was always hanging out front, playing with his voice box, trying to get someone to talk to him, make him feel like a person. The display had a little of everything. Mostly rings. The tennis bracelet was on its own, center stage. I couldn't see the inside of it, but I knew Belinda's initials were engraved there. I was wondering how Robert got the diamonds so sparkly when I walked right into the payphone. My shoulder smacked the glass dome hard enough to turn me toward the beauty salon and dry cleaners across the street. No one in either place to see what an idiot I was. That's when I saw the orange jumpsuits coming with their shovels. I thought about heading the other way, but I needed to get to my desk. Needed to look like everything was normal. I tried to control my thoughts, tried to think about anything but the mine shaft, my escape, but I couldn't help it. I finally had a way out, just not the way Dad wanted. An arm swung out and grabbed my shirt. Wayne King and that nasty beard. Mama's boy has a secret. I threw his hand off, kept moving. Wayne called out, "Don't go leaving without me."
"King!"
the guard yelled.
"Shut your damn mouth or I'll do it for you."
When the office elevator doors opened, I had to squint my eyes. The sixth floor was always too bright, and my head felt ready to split. Nearly every inch of wall was covered with ridiculous posters of exotic locales. Until this moment, I hadn't been able to look at them. The bungalow sitting a foot above the Tahitian clear blue waters, the massive Swiss Alps, the sun shining off the snow-covered ski slopes, the promise of the pyramids, the adventure of African safari. Before this moment, they had been brutal reminders of all of the exciting places I'd never see. But now, with the mineshaft, I just might. Changing out of my shirt was a priority, but first I had to sit down. I had to get my shit together. I squeezed between the desk and the wall and dropped into my chair. My body was already feeling like one big bruise from lifting those rocks. I'd scraped up my arm. My extra strength Excedrin was on the desk, always in reach. I popped two like they could actually take away the pain. I'd need the whole bottle for that, but with my luck, it'd just make me sick. I pulled the shirt out from my desk. Carlos suggested I have a spare after I'd spilled toner in the copy room. Had an accident with the coffee machine. As I buttoned with one hand, I powered on the computer and waited for it to warm up. The dinosaur was 2 years old, plenty of time to get out my yellow pad and two pens, and try not to stare at the wooden picture frame and the fading Polaroid, edges crumpled and black. But I didn't need the photo to remember just how blue the mad river had been, the number of brown trout I was holding, the way I was smiling at Dad, because there was never anyone else around to take the picture. That stupid kid. That stupid smile. I pushed the frame off the edge, right into the trash can. I was letting things get to me, so I took a deep breath and leaned back in the chair, rubbed my temples to clear my head. It worked better than a slap in the face and so much quieter. I reached into the brown bag I'd gotten from the cafeteria and pulled out the cherry-filled donut. It miraculously remained intact, except for the blob of red oozing down the side. With no more shirts, I threw it in the trash, gave the frame some company. Then came the distant drone of a helicopter. Panic. To most people, the helicopter was no big deal. And maybe I was overreacting. But I just knew they'd found my escape. The escape someone else had tried to cover. The helicopter sounded like it was coming from the front of the building, so I hurried down the hallway. Grace, Young, and Trevor had their offices on the left side of the hall, but I was only interested in the ones facing the street. Wendell's was first, the door closed, probably locked, a sad attempt at keeping the donut holes a secret. Sheila's office was next to his. Her door was closed as well, always locked. Nathan, Brightside's resident artist, had the office before the bathrooms, an emergency stairwell. His door was wide open. He never closed it. Said he didn't see the point because he wanted everyone to know he was so fucking cool. The bit of morning light coming through Nathan's window let me see without flipping the switch. I entered the office. Five miniature figures stood sentinel around the room and watched me head behind Nathan's desk. The X-Acto knife right there, ready to create. Remove. The figure sitting on the monitor looked bored, jealous of the one by the phone, both hands on his ears. I looked out the window and saw all of the square, but no helicopter. It sounded further to the left, so I hurried out of Nathan's and turned down the south hallway. Noise was coming from straight ahead, past the conference room to the left, Gloria's and Edwards to my right. It was loudest behind Carlos's door, the only one I couldn't see through. Entering the boss's office was never a good idea, but I did it anyway. From his window, I could see the dull black helicopter was much further than I'd thought, well out of the mounted gun's shooting range. Where it was flying was what bothered me. Hovering halfway up the mountain between the park and the peak, not too far from my carvings, real close to the cemetery. I closed Carlos's door behind me, started for the elevator, and tripped. If I hadn't, Demarius would have heard about my plan. Not just me thinking about my ankle. Demarius, leaned against the wall to my office, his eyes hidden behind the sunglasses. Demarius was the first to speak.
"Damn, son. What you rushing for?"
"I'm just trying to..."
"You cracked the safe?"
"What?" He pointed to Carlos's office.
"Why are you snooping?"
Demarius took a step away from the wall, his usual grin nowhere to be found. He called me over with his finger.
"Let me holler at you."
I focused on my ankle, not the rocks I'd lifted to hide the cave. "I'm real busy."
"Look, I just want to tell you I'm sorry for telling Sharon about your thoughts."
"Oh, no big deal." I headed for my office, hopped so my ankle was all I could think of.
"You one skittish motherfucker."
I threw myself into the chair, my mind back in the forest. The helicopter would see everything. I was fucked. Everything fucked. Sarah was back at her desk. I hadn't seen her on the way in. She was staring at me, her eyes looking ready to pop.
"Joe, you need to stop."
"Stop what?"
"Just stop."
I knew she'd heard every thought, but I couldn't control it. She stood and grabbed my arm. She was stronger than she looked.
"Get up."
"Why?"
"Get up."
Thinking like a drill sergeant, just like Dad. I had no choice. Hopped on one foot, trying to save the ankle. Sarah peeked out the door, checked to make sure the coast was clear. Then she dragged me out of our office, me jumping like an idiot. We made it to the stairwell. There wasn't a camera. But Sarah still wouldn't open her lips.
"Are you fucking crazy?"
"It was our chance to..." Sarah smashed her hand over my mouth and thought.
"You're going to get yourself killed."
"I don't care."
"Joe, if you go running out there, trying to find whatever you found, they're going to send you to the cabin, and then they're going to ask who else knows. They're going to ask Danny."
"Danny doesn't know, but I do." I hated everything coming out of her head, but she was right. If I went out there, I'd never make it to the cave, even if they didn't know about the mineshaft. I'd lead them right to it. Sarah took my arm.
"Let's just get back to work."
I clicked my teeth, knowing it was my only option. I spent the rest of the day at my desk, trying not to think. I couldn't help it, though, which was why Sarah never let me leave, even for lunch. I stayed tethered to that computer, away from everyone else. After work, Sarah invited me over for dinner with Danny. My mind on the helicopter. There'd been no reports of the cave, no mention of anything, except for a few new brightsiders delivered into the fold. I prayed that was it. Danny popped up from the takeout we'd gotten, started spinning around, his mouth motorboating, spit flying out like a disgusting sprinkler.
"Danny, sit down."
"I'm a helicopter."
"Danny, go wash up now."
Danny kept twirling to the bathroom, almost toppling over into the kitchen. "Maybe I should try that," I tapped my skull and said. "Might turn off this stupid thing." Sarah gave a sad smile, a small shake of her head. I felt awful and said I was sorry. And thank you for earlier.
"You're welcome."
Sarah took a bite of her cold fries.
"Although you would have had plenty of time to spin in the cabin."
I smiled. But my mind went to Rachel, to the boots, taking her away, to the forest, to the cave, the long, winding shaft and that terrifying drop. Sarah flinging over the ropes, both of us rappelling. Sarah looked at me, her eyes hard and cold.
"No."
"But we could get out of here."
"And I told you no. Now you need to stop."
"Why?
Don't you want to be..."
I trailed off, suddenly afraid there were cameras. The council said they'd had them all removed from the apartments, but there was no way of knowing. "We can be free." I thought.
And if we got caught?
Sarah shook her head.
Then everything I've done to be here will be for nothing.
The awkward tension physically hunched my back. Thankfully, Danny broke it by walking in with toothpaste caked around his lips. I stood and said my goodbyes, said it was late. Sarah walked me to the door.
Joe?
I turned, saw sadness swirling in her eyes.
I care about you, and I can't thank you enough for looking after Danny. But if you're going to put us in danger, then you can't see us anymore.
My lips started to split between my teeth. I nodded and left before Sarah felt sorry for me. Staying away from Sarah was impossible. Her desk was 8 feet away. But it might as well have been a mile. She focused all of her energy into her calls, and when she did look at me, she only told herself I was a coworker. Nothing more. She had to do this for Danny, because she knew I'd made up my mind.
All right, we are back. That was it. Chapter 10. Hopefully you dug it. There's an escape possibility now. They found the cave. Joe found the cave. But he's also afraid of heights, so is he going to be able to do anything with it? I don't know. You're going to have to wait and find out, right? Kind of also sucks what's going on between him and Sarah. I thought there was something there. I thought maybe they're going to be together. But now, with her being afraid of leaving and not wanting to know anything about the escape, kind of sucks. Oh well, maybe he'll find someone else. Maybe she'll change her mind. Maybe... Again, I guess we gotta fucking wait. I know the answers. Wish I could share them with you guys, but nope. Not gonna happen. What else? I think we're gonna keep this one really short today. Not a whole lot to talk about with that chapter. Didn't give me any insights into myself or the book so much. But hopefully it entertained you. That's what I'm here for, guys. All right. Stick around. Next week we will have chapter 11. I promise it'll be way more exciting. Well, I don't know about chapter 11, but the whole episode overall. Got to do something cool. Not sure what it is, but I'll figure something out. All right, guys. Hope you have an incredible week. And I will talk to you later. See you.